at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. As the Midwest deals with snow, the Florida Panhandle has had tornadoes and powerful wind and heavy rain stretches up the East Coast. Vice President Kamala Harris's plane, Air Force Two, was diverted on its way back from Atlanta because of conditions. For those driving, Jack Fleming with the Philadelphia Police Department warns.
12 inches of rushing water to carry most cars away, 2 feet for an SUV. People sometimes believe falsely with an SUV that they can make it through. We don't encourage that.
CBS News Baltimore reporter Caroline Forback on flood prevention technology being used in Annapolis.
With historic flooding expected to hit Maryland's capital, Burr Vogel, director of public works for the city of Annapolis, keeps a close eye on the city's newest defense against a longtime burden.
We're looking at a new flood barrier that we've just installed this morning, received from a company called Two Barrier, and was represented by Dutch Water Prevention.
Vogel says the barrier took about 15 minutes to install and should protect the flood-prone compromised street from one of the highest tides the city has seen since Isabel.
After Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's lack of a timely disclosure about his hospitalization for prostate cancer surgery, the White House chief of staff has sent a directive to cabinet heads. Pentagon spokesman Pat Ryder.
The bottom line is ensuring that if there is a transfer of authority, making sure that the appropriate senior leaders in the chain of command know.
In a call with his South Korean counterpart, Chang Ho-jin, White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan has discussed North Korea's transfer of missiles to Russia. The White House says the two condemned in the strongest possible terms North Korea's transfer of the missiles. Boeing CEO admits that last week's incident involving an Alaska Airlines flight door panel blowout was the company's mistake and is promising transparency going forward. CBS's Chris Van Cleve has more.
CBS News has learned investigators want to know if Boeing has received damaged door plugs from its supplier. A month ago, a federal complaint by former employees of that supplier, Spirit AeroSystems, alleged the company's products frequently contained defects.
A political risk consultancy group says the greatest threat to global stability may be in President Biden's own backyard. CBS's Matt Piper reports.
The Eurasia Group says America's dysfunctional political system tops the geopolitical risks of 2024. Ian Bremmer is founder of the group.
The United States today is the only advanced industrial democracy in the world that cannot ensure that it will have a free and fair peaceful transition of power that's accepted by its people. That's a pretty serious challenge for the most powerful country in the world.
And he says if and when Donald Trump gets the nomination, his policies will become Republican policies, which will have an impact on the rest of the world.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Sports allow us to play, learn.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehow. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wet, heavy snow fell in much of southern and eastern Wisconsin until late on Tuesday. Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot tells Jane Matinier that 40-mile-per-hour winds will keep driving hazardous until the snow ends.
When you get underneath one of those snow bands, you'll see some snow accumulating a lot quicker out there, making it harder for the plows to keep up with. But they've been doing an awesome job so far. Mm-hmm. I've been checking cameras across the state. Hats off to you guys.
Wet, heavy snow is causing some power outages. Governor Evers says he's having a hard time finding a new Department of Natural Resources secretary. The Republican-controlled state Senate fired 8 of his appointees to different boards and commissions last fall. Evers says some candidates he's considered tell him they don't want to put their families in that situation. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
A Packer player sent to the hospital. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Packers wide receiver Romeo Dobbs had to be sent to a nearby hospital after taking a hit against the Bears Sunday night that left him coughing up blood on the sidelines. Matt LaFleur with an update on Dobbs, listed with a chest injury.
This morning, it seems to be he's doing better, but he'll be day-to-day, I would say.
Did you go to the hospital to get checked out?
Yes, he did.
Is he out now, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The Packers play the Cowboys Sunday in Dallas. College football. The Michigan Wolverines are national champions. They beat Washington last night 34-13. It's the first national title for Michigan since 1997 when one of their players, Charles Woodson, won the Heisman Trophy. NBA. The Bucks with another loss at home, 132-116. The Bucks head coach Adrian Griffin on how the Jazz kept finding open shots.
You know, they were just shooting behind our switches, you know, and that's something we stress, you know, being physical, pushing up, switch under. You know, we dug ourselves in a hole, but we kept fighting.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Winter storm warnings continue. Snow showers and windy. Gusts at times 30 to 40 miles an hour with areas of blowing snow. Up to another inch this evening with snow tapering overnight. It looks mostly cloudy for tomorrow. High temperatures in the low 30s. Current temp is 30.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio. Refreshed.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You really have a beautiful home here.
Oh, thank you.
I've always prided myself in being able to provide my family with a very nice home to live in.
We're going to have a lovely home too, Daddy.
Having a family means being responsible with money. You agree with that, don't you?
Oh, yes, sir. I totally agree with that, sir. I've always believed a penny saved is a penny earned. Did I say something?
Daddy's mother's name was Penny, and he keeps her ashes in an urn.
You're kidding.
Ah, that was a clip. Welcome back to Nightlight. That was a clip from the original Meet the Parents, written and directed and starred in and acted, who played the lead, Greg Galeano, who joins us now on Nightlight with Peach Wabba. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Pete, you should explain the dad got up and left.
Yeah, you know what? I know. I'm learning the ropes here, buddy.
It's so visual, you know, it's hard to find audio clips.
Oh, you know what? We played a half hour of it in the first segment. I was wondering what went wrong. No, you're right. And we have other clips because we're celebrating Norman Lear's life tonight. And there's a whole bunch of clips I have from his TV shows. And I was planning on doing that, kind of describing the action. But your dialogue is so funny, too. That joke, and I know you don't like jokes, but it was delivered. Tell me this, first of all. All right, let's do some background. Greg's movie, Meet the Parents. Tell us the background. You shot it as an independent film in Chicago, right?
Okay. It started off, you know, I was doing stand-up comedy. I dropped out of film school, but I used to make, you know, short films, like five-minute shorts. And I made a short called The Vase. And in this short, I went to meet my girlfriend's parents, and I break their prize vase. So I had this idea about turning it into a feature. You know, I was inspired by the movie The Party with Peter Sellers.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought, if he can do a whole movie where he's just at a party, why can't I do a whole movie where the guy's just going to meet his parents, his girlfriend's parents? So I told that to my friend Emo Phillips, and he was like, well, why don't you write it? And if, you know, if I like it, I'll, you know, put some money into it. So I wrote it with a girl named Mary Ruth Clark, because I knew I'd never written anything, and she had written plays and things. And he ended up funding it, and it, you know, was a very, very low-budget film, and it played the Music Box in Chicago and a bunch of other places. And eventually it came to the attention of Steven Soderbergh, who brought it into Universal, and they remade it.
And it's like the comic who plays to other comics, in my opinion, the movie, because people in the know and really funny people, many think it's funnier than the studio Meet the Parents. And I know people listening are probably going, no way, with Ben Stiller and Robin. Yours is so kind of dark. And Mary Ruth Clark, who co-wrote that with you, also plays the sister, who's a bit psychotic and hilarious in the movie. But what did you shoot that for? Was it less than $50,000?
Yes.
And I can pretty much guarantee, if people can find it on YouTube, and they can, they will laugh
as much as they would in the theater at the Ben Stiller version. So that's a great story. And
I really miss seeing it with an audience.
Oh, I bet.
You get such giant laughs because the laughs, you know, inspire other laughs and it just go on. It was really, really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing like
it. I wish Universal would let me release my film legally, but they won't.
And at this point, why wouldn't they? I mean, they've made the money they're going to make. I'm sure Meet the Parents is still a cash cow on some level, but, you know, I'm sure they would get a taste if you released yours.
I heard they're making another one.
Well, of course they are. Wow.
But there is a book coming out, which I did not write, but I was extensively interviewed for. It's the Meet the Parents story, and it covers the whole thing. And it starts with an email that I got just about 3 or 4 months ago. I inquired whether, you know, I could get the right to show mine in some way, and they shot it down. So that email is the beginning of the book. So it's going to come out from Bear Media Press.
Oh, wow. That's sure great. When, and you're going to tell the whole story, soup to nuts, about how you made your film and it ended up on the big screen from Universal.
The whole story of how, and then how that one got made. It ends with the movie coming out in October of 2003.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah. The remake.
So
that will tell the story.
Say again.
I said that will tell the story. Yeah. If people want to hear about it.
I'm glad it'll be out there. That'll do you some justice too, I think, and tell your side of the story, because I know that wasn't easy for you going through that whole process, and there were people that weren't very nice to you, to save my words. But I have to do a disclaimer. You and I have written stuff together. If people are listening, we've sold a few scripts together, only one of which got made, a guy thing, and you can rent it at various places. But
as of yet, only one.
As of yet. Oh, do you know something I don't? Are they going to make another one?
No. Okay. I still have high hopes of Dreamgirl or Spy High. I know Brian Edding is shopping around Spy High still.
Brian Edding is the producer,
He came for me. He wanted other possible titles for it.
Oh, okay.
Because there's a company that apparently just makes teen comedies,
right?
In high school.
Okay.
And he's pitching it to them. So yeah, it could happen.
And I'm sorry, I'm not changing the title. I'm going to be like George Costanza here, and we are not right. going to change it.
I sent him a list. Spy High is perfect.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have been included in that as a co-writer. Here's my favorite Greg Liana story. You ready for this? I don't know if you remember this.
Oh, God.
Greg and I, as a writing team, had a meeting at the Sony lot in Culver City. And I get there on time, and I'm waiting, and we're waiting for Greg, and it's like 20 after, and she's like, do you want to just start? And I think we were supposed to pitch something. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I called you. You live like 10 miles away in L.A., which might as well have been 50 miles away, and you just woke up. So I know, I'm like, he's an hour minimum from getting here. So I said, look, he just overslept. Do you want to reschedule? She says, no, we'll wait. I'm like, oh my, with the two of us in the room, waiting for
you. It was probably 5 o'clock at night, 5 p.m.
Why don't we make this a dinner meeting? Yeah. And we're talking politics. I'm like, yeah, see if you know this song. And I'd sing, you know, whatever I could do to get through the meeting. It's like waiting for you to get there with Bedhead. Anyway, that was fantastic.
I think I blocked that out now that you mentioned it. Like, vaguely, I'm usually early. I'm like early as on time. I'm usually early everywhere. So
yeah. Well,
I must have been before noon or something.
And sometimes we'd talk before. Hey, you on your way? Yeah. Okay. I don't know why we didn't that day in particular, but
right.
So Greg, as you've heard, Norman Lear, a true legend, passed away.
Yes.
Your thoughts, please.
Well, it's hard to mourn somebody who was 101, but
it was tragic.
such a genius, such a trailblazer. You know, I love a movie that he made in the 60s called The Night They Raided Minsky's.
Oh, really? I saw that in his credits. I've never seen it, though.
Yeah, it really is one of the movies that I wanted to be that kind of comedian. It's all about burlesque and all that. But, I mean, all in The Family and The Jeffersons and Maud. I mean, those shows are just so amazingly great, you know.
Oh, it's incredible. It's really, and how he rolled them out, like he would introduce the characters on All in the Family, like the Jeffersons and Maude, and then the next thing you know, you got another hit show that's not fluff either. Like, they tackled topics that were difficult even then. And I think my personal favorite was Good Times, and because I was too young to understand All in a Family. I love the Good Times was set in Chicago, and I liked Jimmy Walker when I was like 5 years old, you know. But that was an underrated show too, I thought.
Dynamite, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been recently watching All in the Family again. I think it really holds up. It's just, you know, it's so funny that you could never do a show like that today.
Well, that's my question. I got two more guests coming on to talk about Norman Lear. Do you think that could be done today?
I mean, it would be ideal, you know, if the dad is, you know, Archie's a Trump supporter and, you know.
Right.
But I just don't think they would allow it. I mean, he uses many slurs, you know, names.
Yeah. And, no, for sure.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
So we're doing our question tonight, Greg, is Taylor Swift. I don't know if you heard this. I don't know if you still subscribe to Time Magazine or if anybody actually has a subscription, but she was voted the person of the year. So you don't have to give me your answer right now, but I would like you to think about that and tell me who you would have voted for person of the year at some point during this interview.
Am I allowed to vote for myself?
Sure. Greg Liana is our person of the year. So
okay, there's my vote.
I'm talking with Greg Liana. He is the creator of Meet the Parents, and he has a new film coming out, which we'll get to in just a minute. But I saw something that made me think of you, Greg. I went and saw Silent Night the other night, the Joel Kinnaman film that just got released. I went with Mary, with my wife and my daughter. I didn't know when I went. Silent Night, there is no dialogue. So I immediately thought of you. I'm like, Greg would be in heaven because you love silent films. But, I mean,
I love silent comedy.
this is not that. But it amazed me. And I've seen my share of silent stuff, not like you certainly, but like, you should be able to tell a story with no dialogue. And in Silent Night, Joel Kinnaman is just angry. There's no redemption. It's just him getting revenge. You really don't need words. I mean, the script must have been like 40 pages of action. John Woo directed it. But do you think you could pull off a comedy like that today where there's no talking?
Well, I mean, they did that for 30 years. Before sound came in.
But now we're used to dialogue. I mean, do you think it could be done now?
But, you know, it's funny. Meet the Parents kind of also came out of a discussion that Emo and I used to have, Emo Phillips. You know, I was saying I could take any of the silent movies like Harold Lloyd or Buster Keaton, and I could just add realistic dialogue, and they would still be funny.
Right.
Excuse me. Because of their situation. And my Meet the Parents was kind of a test of that. You know,
right.
There's dialogue all the way through it, but you could watch the film with no dialogue and figure out what's happening.
Yeah.
And the action shots and things. So absolutely, I think you could make a movie now because the silent movies are just situational.
Right. Well, and a story is told through actions too. I mean, I was watching it thinking, I wonder what, and I don't know what the box office numbers are, but I was wondering like how people were going to react to this because it's definitely a shoot 'em up, you know, and I was kind of depressed when I left. We all were. And then it's like, I kind of had an appreciation for it because like what John Woo did, there's a lot of action, but no dialogue. And I actually kind of admired him for not making the character, for not giving him any redeeming qualities. He's just out for revenge. Yeah. And I'm not disclosing anything. His son dies very early in the movie in a drive-by shooting, and he just goes after gangbangers like 10 at a clip for the rest of the movie.
You know, there's a great movie that Steven Soderbergh made called Contagion.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And half of that is a silent movie. You just see this stuff going down and there's music playing, you know, but you don't hear dialogue.
Yeah.
But no, absolutely. If you know, this, and I think even today, the situation, the story is more important than the dialogue.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. Hey, the other thing we're talking about, Greg, I hope you can hang through the break. It's a very short one, and we'll talk about the road dog. But it's Nightlight with Pete Schwabba here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Maxine Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. By the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music, and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Maxine Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic
Civic Media Radio Network.
Be a part of the resistance. Check out The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, Monday nights at 7 on locally grown radio, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR, and on the Civic Media app. It's fully leaded education talk.
Hard facts with a humorous twist.
Check out Busted Pencils, Tuesdays at 7 on locally grown radio, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR, and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Were you, Stephen Wright turned 74 today. Were you a fan?
Did he die?
No, he turned 74. Were you a fan?
Yes, I think he was great. Probably still is. He made a short film that won an Oscar.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think what it was called. But then,
the appointment of Dennis Jennings.
Yeah. Then he just kind of dropped the ball, and I thought he was going to be the next Woody Allen or someone.
Yeah.
But no, he was great. And, it really sucks that I'm so old that all the people that I liked are all like pushing 90 now.
Your influences, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Woody Allen's 88. It's like, what the heck,
I think the appointment of Dennis Jennings was him telling his shrink very personal things, right? And then all of a sudden, this arm comes out from under the desk with a wrench or something. This construction worker was under there working the whole time, and he had no idea. That movie.
he was talking about some personal thing. Yeah,
it was great.
I love that he had this dream where this what was it? The guy was getting hit with a shovel or something, and it turns out he thought it was his radiator. Then the camera kind of pans out the window, and some guy's getting hit with a shovel.
And he's the writer, director, actor of the one and true Meet the Parents that was shot as an independent film in the early 90s in Chicago, and became, I believe, the highest grossing live action comedy franchise ever. So Greg is with us right now. Is that true, Greg?
Well, according to them, it's lost money. So
your residual checks do not indicate that it is.
No, this was probably about seven, eight years ago. But I am supposed to get these statements because I have a net points.
Yeah.
And it was like $60 million in the hole or something, the original.
Wow.
It's a studio accounting. One of their biggest hits of all time is lost money,
Yet they keep making movies. Explain that. Hey, before we talk about The Road Dog, can I play one more funny clip from Meet the Parents? I love this clip. Do you mind?
Go for it.
All right, let's do it, Conrad.
That roast smells awfully good, Kay. Mrs. Burns is famous for her roast beef.
Oh, he's exaggerating. Pamela tells us that you're an advertiser.
Yes, I'm an advertiser.
Exactly. What is your job, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, basically, we just try to come up with new ideas to help sell our clients' products.
Honey, why don't you tell Greg about that idea you came up with?
Oh, I'm sure he wouldn't be interested.
What is it?
Daddy invented a new product for the garden.
Oh, well, I'd like to hear it.
Tell him, dear.
Well, I do a bit of gardening in my spare time, and I thought of a product that I think will be useful in getting rid of weeds out of gardens. I was thinking, get a long stick so you don't have to bend over, and on one end, you'd have a wire that would spin around and cut the weeds off right at ground level.
Isn't that clever?
Don't they have that?
Not to my knowledge.
No, I think it's one of those things you always see advertised on late night TV. Is it a weed whacker?
I've never seen that.
Oh, and you spent so much time on that model. Daddy doesn't watch much late night TV.
All right, you can cut it, Conrad. It's a funny scene, Greg, but what makes me laugh even more is the fact that the whole family was clueless. It's like they're this weird... Like, none of them have heard of the weed whacker, or they just didn't want to tell them it had already been invented. Greg? Do we still have Greg?
Oh, sorry. I hit the mute button. The guy who plays the dad, his name is Dick Galloway, and he has such a great
hilarious
look of just hurt. He's so devastated that his weed whacker was not an original idea.
But you know what I mean? Like the whole family, none of them had heard of it. Like, or they just didn't have the guts to tell him about it. God, it just, that like got by me the first 10 viewings and then I caught it. But okay, so.
Well.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say it's all a story being told anyway by a gas station.
Gas station. Oh, that's right. Okay.
Wants to ruin somebody's day. So
good point.
Blame him.
So tell us about your new film, The Road Dog.
Is a wonderful film with an amazing performance by the comedian Doug Stanhope.
Yeah, great comic.
and it's kind of my return to indie filmmaking. It was reminded me a lot of Meet the Parents, shooting the film under, limited budget and all that.
Yeah.
But it's something I think it came out really good, and I hope people will watch it and appreciate it. You're in it too, right?
I'm in it. I play Mark Schufelt, a comedy club owner we knew back in the day when we were comics. And that was great. It was a fun experience. I mean, we've all dealt with comedy club owners. It was kind of a gas to play one, and work with Doug too, to be in a scene with Doug Stanhope. That was a lot of fun. So yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, you're good. And he's a great actor, isn't he?
He is. He's very, I didn't know what to expect because I know he's a great comic. I was surprised and he was fun to play off of in the scene. What, your film won some awards too, didn't it?
Yeah. It's just various film festivals.
Well, that's something.
I actually wrote a song for the closing credits that is officially in the Oscar. It has been, it'll be a miracle if it gets nominated, but it's officially in the,
Like the running. Being considered as a?
Yes.
No
yes.
Kidding. How do you even do that?
Well, we had a small theatrical release, but that's all you need to qualify for the Oscars. So we just submitted it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Well, you never know. There are people that have Oscars for really obscure categories, but they still have an Oscar, and that's like pretty incredible.
Yeah, but this would be against, Barbie and all these giant films, and our little mini budget with. Yeah, whatever. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I don't think you deserve to win because of your attitude, frankly, Greg.
I think they agree with you.
So I have two questions for you. I'm putting you on the spot. You can answer one of them. My first question is, what is your worst Hollywood experience and what was your best? My second one is, who is the greatest actor of all time and who is the greatest filmmaker of all time? We got about a minute and a half.
Okay. I'll start with that one. Peter Sellers was the greatest actor
who ever
lived.
That. He's great.
He could do anything, play anything, and he was believable. And, what was the second half of that?
Greatest filmmaker.
Woody Allen, of course.
Over Buster Keaton or...
Nobody has made as many great films as Woody Allen.
Yeah, he's pretty prolific.
He's made about 50 films, and probably 30 of them are great. And, 15 of them are masterpieces.
Yeah. No, that's incredible.
I think he's the best in history. Okay. And what's the first part? My worst experience in Hollywood.
Worst Hollywood experience and best.
We went to some meeting, you and I, and we were pitching something, and... It was this female executive, and she—I think she basically fired her assistant because
she hated
the assistant, okayed our pitch, mm-hmm. and she was just like so just dismissive of it. And
the assistant loved the pitch. We pitched. The boss hated it, and we heard yelling as we left the office. We're like, oh, we just got someone fired.
And I think Guy Fing too was a really bad experience because I saw firsthand how a great script, and that was a great script,
right,
how that got ruined.
Yeah,
first they read it and they go, the script's in great shape, just take look at this dark ending, maybe you can like lighten that up a little bit, the script's in great shape,
but other than that,
then you do it and they read it again, why don't you look at this dialogue at the beginning, maybe a dialogue can be punched up a little, so you punch up the dialogue, then they hire other writers, come in and give a pitch, and they jump up on the table. And
now you're okay. Now you're depressing me, and I still have an hour show to do, so I gotta let you go. But Greg, thanks so much.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News Brief. Weather alerts stretch from the Midwest, which has snow, to the Northeast and down south, which is high winds and heavy rain. Dean Mazzarella is the mayor of Leominster, Massachusetts, where residents are still recovering from flooding in the fall.
Cautiously optimistic that the system will handle it, but on high alert.
U.S. and U.K. forces today have shot down 21 drones and missiles fired by Yemen-based Houthis into the southern Red Sea towards international shipping lanes. CENTCOM says no damage or injuries reported. It's the 26th Houthi attack in the area since November 19th. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's hospitalization due to prostate cancer surgery has raised a lot of questions about delegation of authority and notification protocols. CBS's Linda Kenyon reports.
The dust-up Austin's absence created has led to a change in procedure. The White House chief of staff says going forward, cabinet heads must notify his office if they cannot perform their duties.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. New technology developed in Wisconsin could help doctors detect developmental disorders before a baby is born. The University of Wisconsin in Madison says it's currently focused on autism, ADHD, and other disorders that aren't usually diagnosed until later. Republicans say they'll shut down the federal government if they don't get a deal to shut down the border. Congressman Brian Stile on WISN-TV's Up Front.
We're fighting about whether or not we should be mopping up the mess on the floor. I say, turn the spigot off, and you turn the spigot off by actually ending the illegal immigration in the United States and securing the border.
Democrats note that lawmakers have passed on several opportunities to update immigration laws, but haven't. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Winter storm warnings continue. Snow showers and windy. Gusts at times 30 to 40 miles an hour with areas of blowing snow. Up to another inch this evening with snow tapering overnight. It looks mostly cloudy for tomorrow. High temperatures in the low 30s. Current temp is 30.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Data shows that after a child turns 9 in foster care, they are much less likely to be adopted. But the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption believes every child is adoptable.
Families, if you're able to let your hair down a little bit, there's a lot to learn from teenagers.
The clock is ticking for teens at risk of aging out of foster care. Learn how you can help at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey, this is Pete Schwabo. Welcome back to Nightlight. As you can see outside, we got some snow last night, and we're snowed in. I'm very excited to welcome my next guest. He is a really fast-rising, up-and-coming director, and he's probably already there. Like I said, I met this guy a few years ago through a film we both worked on, and all of a sudden, he's got like five movies under his belt as a director. Tyler McIntyre joins me now over the phone. Tyler, how are you?
Good, Pete. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Now, you told me you're going to be driving to Canada. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm literally driving through Salt Lake City right now with my wife, Alana, in the back seat. And I'm glad we could do this.
Me too, buddy. It's great. And I hope you're driving safely while you're talking to me, because it sounds like you got precious cargo there. But thanks for joining.
Always.
Yeah, good. So where do you live in Canada? Or where are you from?
Yeah, we both grew up in a town called Olds, which is just north of Calgary. Kind of from the prairies near the mountains there.
Oh, that's so funny. I just had my friend Rob Cohen was on the show last week. He's a writer, director in L.A. He's from Calgary. And he made a great documentary called Being Canadian, kind of about how so many funny people have come out of Canada, like in a ratio situation, so many more than that are from the U.S. It was a fascinating documentary and really funny too. If that's something you want to check out, you know.
Yeah, I've actually heard of that. Yeah. There's a great comedy tradition up there. We have the Second City and everything like that. And a lot of those things we've done, like in Edmonton, you got, John Candy was a personal favorite of mine growing up, and you got tons of them.
That's great. So let's talk about you do not involve yourself in comedy. Your films are pretty serious. And this latest film, It's a Wonderful Knife, I watched the trailer for it. First of all, beautiful film. I mean, at least the trailer. That's some gorgeous cinematography. And I love the premise. Can you tell me a little bit about, and the listeners, about It's a Wonderful Knife?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So it's essentially a Christmas that is somewhat of a reimagining of the classic Frank Capra movie, It's a Wonderful Life, but essentially as a horror film. And so it's about a young woman named Winnie who is in this town that's obsessed with Christmas called Angel Falls. And then kind of horror strikes, and she ends up kind of rising to the occasion and sort of taking out this kind of masked killer that goes on a bit of a spree. And then she comes by that. And so next time Christmas rolls around a year later, she has a lot of trauma and a lot of baggage from that. And she makes this kind of misguided wish that maybe she would be better if, or maybe things would be better off if she was ever born. And so she wakes up in now a nightmare version of this town, and things have spiraled out of control. And she has to kind of solve the mystery behind this killer before it's too late.
Yeah, it's so creepy. And it's such a great premise. This is kind of like a trend now, like the horror Christmas film. Do you watch others like that along in the same genre?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of a spike of them happening right now. But I mean, I grew up with a lot of kind of horror Christmas stuff that I really liked. I really loved like A Nightmare Before Christmas and things like that. I'm a big fan of the Richard Donner, Bill Murray Scrooged. And even that, A Christmas Carol has a lot of horror elements in it. You have all those amazing people. And so I think Christmas and horror go well together in a way that a lot of genre people don't really expect.
Tyler, did you see Silent Night by any chance?
Silent Night, the new John Woo movie?
Yeah, with Joel Kinnaman.
Yeah. I have not seen it, but I'm very aware of it. I'm a huge John Woo fan. I just haven't been able to get out of the house and check it out yet.
Yeah, we'll have to talk after you see it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, because I wrestled with it for a while. But at the end of the day, I really liked what they did there. At the very least, it was really interesting. So I'd love to know your take on it, since you're kind of making films in that genre, too, especially around Christmas.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, John Woo is, he kind of invented that, whole kind of shoot 'em up genre that you see with like John Wick and things like that. And it's interesting to have him kind of go back after sort of giving birth to that genre and do something in that climate.
Yeah. And he takes some chances too. I'd be real interested to know what you think. When I Googled your film, it's so funny. I was using voice and I put in It's a Wonderful Knife. It would not come up. They kept saying life, like you are really tied to It's a Wonderful Life with your film that sort of parallels it. So I think that's kind of cool. Were you apprehensive at all making it so close to that film?
It's, I mean, when you watch the film, it's not like beat for beat kind of remake of it. It's just a bit of a riff on it. So it's, you know, and people are very aware of that narrative. There's a lot of movies that have kind of magical wish sort of components to them. You know, and I kind of looked at a lot of the, or movies that have like alternate reality versions, you know, even stuff like Back to the Future 2 or like Mr. Destiny, or like there's a lot of films that kind of play on that element because it's just a very popular narrative device. And so, but like, you know, I have a lot of respect for that kind of classic movie, but I also think it's one of those things that is in, you know, the culture in a way that you know, could be used in a more kind of fun sort of postmodern way, the way we're using it.
Sure.
So we can try and have a little fun with the form without people getting too bent out of shape with it. And that's the kind of the reception it's been having. It's been very warm by the genre fans and people who are discovering it. It's a bit of what we call kind of gateway horror, where it's a light enough movie in that it's like a horror comedy, where like it's not super scary, and so but it's scary enough for horror fans, but they can also watch it with other people who are maybe not as or don't seek out horror movies as much, and still have a really good time.
Yeah, wow, that's really well put. That's interesting. So you had Justin Long and Joel McHale, two pretty big actors. Do you find, as a director, do you find it's easier to work with actors who have a lot of credits under their belt or who are established or maybe even bigger names as opposed to those who aren't? Is there a difference in how you direct actors like that?
Yeah, I love working with bigger names. Usually they're super experienced. Sometimes there comes like a bit of like a buy-in, you know, like especially when you're a first-time director, like the first couple of movies that I did, you know, like they like to kind of vet you a little bit.
Yeah.
But I didn't really have... like Joel just kind of checked out my last movie, Tragedy Girls, and just really loved it. And so, you know, it was, and like Justin Long and I are the same agency. So, it was a little bit easier to kind of get some people to kind of vouch for me because I have enough of a track record at this point, but I definitely love to, you know, I love trying to take actors, and use them in ways that they don't usually get used.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, Justin's done a fair amount of horror, but he's really known for his comedy. And similarly, like Joel is a guy who is, you know, in a lot of very kind of seminal comedic series. And we're playing him kind of straight, like we're playing him in a bit of a satirical way. And then we're also playing him in kind of a darker sort of tone in ways that you don't like colors that you don't usually see. And that's the thing that people don't really understand about actors is that, you know, you get kind of used to seeing them in certain ways, but that's not all they want to play or nor what all they're capable of. And so I love to try and... I mean, I prefer comedic actors, like just because I find that they're very able to kind of roll with the punches. Like they can, and comedy is very difficult, and I think much more difficult than a lot of dramatic stuff, because it's hard to, you can overshoot it. Like you have to kind of work very hard at it, or like you have to, like drama, you work hard at it and things get better. Like the more you kind of put into it, whereas comedy, you can, it's a little bit harder to tell how you're doing. You have to kind of gut check with the audience in a way. And I find that a lot of comedic actors can do drama very well. They just put more work into it, whereas the opposite is not always true.
That is a really great answer, because I could not agree with you more. My background is in comedy, and I feel like, and in so many comedies, there is such phenomenal acting. Like, if it's not too jokey, like when the comedy comes out of the character, it's very difficult to do, and you have to know where the comedy is. So I've always said that, like, if you can act in comedy, you can do anything. And it's funny what you said about Justin Long, because you're right. I saw a movie recently called Barbarian that he was in.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, and I love what they did with the script. Like, all of a sudden we're in California and we're meeting Justin Long, and he's really funny in it. He's got some chops. So yeah, you got it. Well done on the cast here. I'm talking with Tyler McIntyre, by the way. He's the director of It's a Wonderful Knife. And a really kind of hot commodity right now in Hollywood, right? And you live out west, right, Tyler?
Yeah. So I live in Los Angeles, like I mentioned, I'm from Canada originally, but I spend most of my I live in LA. So
yeah. So you did not write this film, at least according to IMDb, but other credits that you've directed, you've written. Can you talk about, like, what do you prefer, and is it harder or easier to direct something you didn't write?
I find it's a different experience. Like, I'm primarily I consider myself just kind of a general filmmaker, which, when you want to be the creative head on a project, is obviously like a film director. But I'm always writing, and I have, you know, since I was about 12 years old. So I am always generating new stories. But I also find stories that I can fall in love with that other people have done, and then try and just kind of make those a reality. Because what is the most disappointing thing to me about screenwriting is it's never a finished product until it's done. It's like the blueprint for a house kind of thing. And unless you build the house and have somebody live in it, it's not a real thing in the way that like a book is like a finished product. And so, I love helping people make films. I love going out and doing, the project we worked on, like Aquarians, like I was an editor on that. But went out to Wisconsin where we shot and was a very hands-on, collaborator to Mike McGuire who directed it and met a lot of great people doing that. And that to me is what's rewarding about working in film. And so, I just kind of look for stories and people that I like. And Michael Kennedy, who wrote Freaky before this and then wrote It's a Wonderful Knife, was actually a producer with us on this movie. We went to Vancouver and made it together.
You mentioned Aquarians by Michael McGuire. It's funny. I made a film in Marinette, which is where we shot Aquarians, called The Godfather of Green Bay 20 years ago. And I cast Lauren Holly, Tony Goldwyn, Tom Lennon, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm never going to act in another film in Marinette, Wisconsin again, because it's this little town. And here comes Mike McGuire with his film, and he needed local actors. What a blast that was. But it's out there for people to watch. Check out Aquarians. Tyler edited it. But what I thought was interesting is I talked to Mike, and I knew you were the editor. He spoke so highly of you. All of a sudden, you're like directing these huge films. My question is, does coming from an editorial background or that of an editor make it easier to direct? Was it an easier transition for you?
Yeah, I mean, like people like to kind of put you in boxes, like in the entertainment industry, as I'm sure you're aware.
Yeah.
But I find that as a director, if you have an editorial background, a lot of people don't really understand editing. I mean, kind of executives, producers, like people who are pretty high on the totem pole. Actors, kind of notoriously. And so if you can kind of know what you need and know how things are constructed, and I've gone through that process a lot, it gives you this kind of like almost superpower on set where you can save a lot of time. And it's like a shorthand or shortcut you can have to kind of like getting what you want. And people, once they kind of realize that, they'll trust you. And it makes things so much easier. But often you have to kind of earn that respect by cutting the first couple of days of shooting and things like that. But it was definitely a very valuable time. I was an editor for almost 10 years, and it was something that's really informed the way I not only construct scenes when I'm directing them, but also how I approach things as a director and how I discuss things with people. But the same is true for people who come from other backgrounds, like yourself. If you're coming from like an acting background, I'm sure like that would inform, directorial choices that you would make,
Sure. And my background is a little bit of acting, but primarily writing. And to me, I've always said, like, I think the script is the most important part of the whole process. And it pains me when I see something that I sold that will never get made, because I feel like at least if you write a script, you've got something, you've got a story to show people. It's really, to me personally, I don't know how you feel, but the most integral part of the whole process. Do you enjoy the, can you hang for like 60 seconds, Tyler? I just have a few more questions. We got to do a quick bit of business. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. My guest is Tyler McIntyre. He is an up and coming director. He's got like 5 movies already under his belt. Very well reviewed, really tight movies. I haven't seen the new one. It's a Wonderful Knife is the film. And he is the director. We're talking to him. We will be back in 60 seconds. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
About you, baby, my one desire. Gonna wrap my arms around you and hold you close to me. Oh, baby, wanna taste your lips.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Get your tickets now for MJ the Illusion. It's not just a Michael Jackson tribute show. It's a true King of Pop concert experience featuring live vocals by Michael Knight, along with his team of world-class dancers. From the lights, costumes, music, and choreography, this show is a must-see for any fans of Michael Jackson. One night only, Thursday, January 25th, 7:30 p.m. in Wisconsin Rapids. Learn more at SavorTheArts.com. Let us entertain you.
Say it with me, the Bucks in six. And you could catch every play, every score, every Milwaukee Bucks game on locally grown radio, WFHR, 1320 AM, 97.5 FM. Your station for the Milwaukee Bucks, your hometown radio refreshed.
Tune into The Empowered Caregiver with me, Liza Hellenbrand, every Wednesday evening at 7.
On locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and 1320 AM, WFHR.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Connor, the producer. Welcome back to Nightlight. As you can see, we got some snow last night, so Pete and I are snowed in. But luckily, we have an interview right now with local Madison filmmaker James Rundy. We hope you enjoy.
I love having friends on the show, especially friends I really respect that make great films. So, James, before I'm talking to James Rundy, he's a Madison filmmaker, and we heard clips from White and Lazy and Played Out. Two great films that both won awards, if memory serves, at the Wisconsin Film Festival recently. Before we went to the first break, you started to talk about your new upcoming film, but it sounds like you didn't want to disclose any state secrets. So can you elaborate a little more where that conversation was headed?
No, I mean, it's already out there on public forums, so people know that it's comprised, if you follow me, nobody probably does.
But, well, if they follow you, I hope they're listening to this show. So we can help each other out.
I built it up. Whatever.
That's all anyway, right.
The thing is about it, it's all told in photographs. It's Ken Burns. It's La Jetée. It's all told in black and white, grainy, still 35 millimeter photographs, which I took myself. Okay. Throughout.
Oh, so I saw this. You played this at the most recent festival. Yeah. That was so cool.
Well, not even the most, 2 years ago. So, okay. So 2 years ago was, but it's part of what I want to be, a feature film. It's going to be a feature mockumentary film, but I don't spread that far and wide because I want it to eventually kind of be like a Blair Witch Project thing where people don't quite know if it's real because I keep sending this clip to a friend and she keeps forgetting that it's me in the clip. And so she'll be like, wow, that's a compelling interview. Like, where'd you find that guy? And I'm like, that's me. It'd be especially funny if you knew that the film is about aliens, right? So I'm playing a guy who's convinced that I've had contact with extraterrestrials and they've actually shown me a new way to communicate and to, experience the universe or whatever, so basically what happens is that in a dive bar in a far-flung city in rural Michigan,
love it,
an alien touches my forehead and gives me a vision of my childhood and of my wife that has passed away, and I interpret this signal, you know what I mean, and
wow.
it sends me on this quest to figure out this method of communication and the beyond, because then he's, after he does this, he zooms off into the sky.
That's so great. And that's such a departure from what you've done, it seems like. Although it's not, because you do like to do different things. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm always mixing it up. And the thing is this is a pandemic film. So this is kind of another hook. So during the pandemic, I was working from home and I would be a lot of times just kind of like watching my email, but like not really doing a whole lot. So while I'm watching my email, I would started scanning in all my old photographs, which I had taken since 2014, you know, so it's been like 10 years of film photography for me. And there's, you know, upwards of 1,000 photographs. So I was scanning them all in, you know, and trying to, you know, make them look nice and take the dust and scratches away. And I'm thinking like, this is a movie, you know, all these different scenes. I have photos from Africa. I have photos from, you know, like all these crazy places I was.
And they're hypnotic. 20s. The photos.
And what you've seen is not even a quarter. I mean, not even a drop. Like what's in the short is just nothing compared to what the images that you'll see, like rodeos, rural Senegal, the American West, you know, Austin, Texas, South by Southwest, Mardi Gras, like when you name it, like it's that's in cool. this movie. Well, so they're all black and white stills. It's a good old American B movie. It's like an alien, you know, horror. It's got elements of that. It's got elements of spirituality. It's everything.
Very stylistic too. I would assume it will be when we. Hey, is Madison a good town to be a filmmaker? We got about 1 minute left, James. Unfortunately, I have 12,000 more questions. But how is Madison as a filmmaker town? Good town to shoot films in.
Yeah, I mean, I think okay. Listen, I can't compare it to anything else. So. Okay. I'll start.
So it's great.
Yeah.
And the worst.
Yeah, right. I think people are generally pretty helpful, like especially locations. People want to help. And also actors. I think there's actually pretty acting talent. And if anybody out there is an amateur filmmaker, I think musicians especially make good actors. And I think there's quite a few like talented musicians in Madison. And I think that performing on stage is similar to performing in front of the camera. And I think that you can make a lot go with that. And that's kind of what I did with Played Out.
That's really interesting. What is your band called, James? You want to do a quick plug for the music?
Well, yeah. And so people watching Played Out will be hearing The Smells. That was my original band. But then my current band is called The Scratch Offs. And that's kind of like, if you like the Rolling Stones and if you like The Replacements, and if you like R&B and soul and Aretha Franklin and Elvis and anything good about America, then you'll like The Scratch Offs. So,
well, you'll have to come back when we have more time, buddy, because this has been fun. And I wish you luck with the new film. I can't wait to see it.
Good. Cool. Thanks, Pete.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. My pleasure. Have a great night. Thanks. That's James Runday. Thank you, buddy. Great filmmaker from Madison. I highly recommend going to YouTube and looking for White and Lazy. And I think he said Played Out was there too. So check out James's work. He's got a new one coming out soon. Hey, this was really fun. I hope we gave you guys some good suggestions to watch. I got another texter here. Oh, also from the 414. No sarcasm. So that was just a nice hearted text. Thank you. And thanks for all the texts and the suggestions. You guys are always welcome to text anytime about what you're watching anytime. This is an open forum. I like discussion and I like discourse. So keep those texts coming. Great stuff. Stick around for Mad Unity if you're listening in Madison. Great show, great music show. And so thanks for listening and hanging out with me. I'm Pete Schwabe. This is Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news talk and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly.